opportunity and express to you my personal appreciation for all of the encouragement that Women's Missionary Union in various parts and in all parts of our nation has supplied already. We thank you for the support that you give in prayer. We're grateful for the support that you provide in missionary education. And we're grateful for the support you provide in contributions through the cooperative program and through the Annie Armstrong offering. We ask your continued prayers as we try under the leadership of God to serve in this new age that is emerging. I think you would be interested in knowing the latest report on the 1965 Annie Armstrong offering. It is still a bit early to predict on this basis where we think the final figure will be. But as of May 18th, 13 days ago, when the last check was received, the total had come to $2,091,909.96. So just above $2 million. This is well above the figure at a comparable period a year ago. It is slightly above the figure of 2 years ago. This simply indicates that the checks come in at different times from the different states, so it's a little bit hard to conclude anything simply on the basis of comparative figures at a given date. But we're grateful for the significant help provided through the Annie Armstrong offering as through the basic line of support, which is the cooperative program. Let me invite you, if you can be here through Wednesday, and we hope that all of you can, to visit the Home Mission Board reception, which will be held on Wednesday afternoon. That time you will have opportunity to meet many of the missionaries. The reception will be held in the Baker Hotel, the Terrace Room, beginning at 3 o'clock, from 3 until 5 o'clock. I think many of you also would like to have a word about our missionaries in Cuba. As I think all of you know, on April 8, a number of our missionaries were arrested. Included were Dr. Herbert Caudle, who has served in Cuba for 35 years and is director of our work there. Also, Brother David Feit, son-in-law of the Caudles. Now, after some 6 weeks, they underwent trial. Then on last Friday, the announcement was made and conveyed to us by our State Department that Dr. Caudle would receive a sentence of 10 years in prison and Mr. Feit a sentence of 6 years in prison. Along with Dr. Caudle and Mr. Feit, there was a considerable number of Cubans also jailed, a total of 53. Four of these are Cuban women. Of the 53, 34 were tried. We don't know about the other 19. And we don't know what sentence will be meted to the 32 Cubans who stood trial along with Dr. Caudle and Mr. Feit. We are in constant touch with the State Department of our government. They have rendered outstanding service. Our government State Department is in constant touch with the Swiss Embassy in Havana, which is representing our government there. We are most pleased with the service they have rendered. We can assure you that your board, working with our government officials, will continue to do, as we have been doing, everything possible for the safety and, we pray, the ultimate release of these, our missionaries. We have had to be careful lest in trying to seek any special favors for the Caudles and the Feits, we might jeopardize the well-being of our Cuban missionaries and Cuban fellow Christians. This is a time to remember our fellow Baptists in Cuba in prayer. Particularly, let us remember these in prison. Remember their families. On Friday, our Dr. Corder had an extended telephone conversation with Mrs. Caudle. She stated they are well, their needs are being met, and they are safe. They are able to visit. Mrs. Caudle and Mrs. Feit are able to visit their husbands once a month. They are able to take food to their husbands twice a month. And you will remember these wives and the children of the Feits. And you'll remember the loved ones here in this country as you will remember these who are in jail for the sake of the gospel. It sounds like some of the things that happened in the days of the New Testament. So you'll continue to pray. And I think these, our fellow Christians in Cuba, would want us to pray that whatever may happen may redound to the furtherance of the gospel. But our attention in this period is not to be given to our work in these Caribbean countries where we have the privilege of serving. Rather, we're to think about missions in the homeland for a new age. A century ago, A. Cleveland Cox penned these inspiring lines, which we find in our hymn books. We are living, we are dwelling in a grand and awful time, in an age on ages telling, to be living is sublime. If the 19th century was a time of influence upon future ages, how much more true is this day and this two-thirds point in the 20th century to have its effect upon the ages to come. We're extremely aware of a highly accelerated pace, of exciting changes, and of disturbing trends in our society. Southern Baptist Home Missions begins with the convention's organizational meeting in Augusta, Georgia, in 1845. From that day until this, Southern Baptists have tried to discharge in some worthy measure their obligation to share the gospel around the world through two mission boards, one to serve overseas, one to serve in the homeland. Today, you are serving through your home mission board more extensively than ever before in a wider variety of ministries and through more missionaries than ever in the past. Southern Baptist Home Missions now touches all 50 states plus Panama and Cuba and Puerto Rico. Mission efforts focus upon cities and rural areas, upon blossoming suburban communities and blighted downtown inner sections of our cities, upon persons of many races and of non-Christian faiths. Across this nation, more than 2,000 missionaries represent you and me. Most of them are supported jointly by the Home Mission Board and one of the state conventions. They share the gospel with young and old, with cultured and uncultured. As we consider the circumstances in which home missions is carried on today, we can agree with the planners of this program that we're living in a new age. As we consider some of the marks of this new age, there are three I should like particularly to call to your attention. One of them is secularization. Another is urbanization, and the other is population. Secularism may be defined as the ordering of life without reference to God. This would seem to be the philosophy of the majority of our fellow Americans. Dean Samuel H. Miller of Harvard University recently wrote, "The secular age has come. On all sides, it proclaims itself frankly, proudly, even a bit boisterously. The world operates very well in most areas without paying any attention at all to religion. In fact, faith has been put into a pocket to which the world may revert at odd times when and if it pleases." He is saying that in our land and our day, religion receives a lot of lip service, but he is pointing out that the number of those genuinely, truly committed to Jesus Christ is still a minority. In such an atmosphere, respect for authority is diminished in government and school and home. Adult crime and juvenile delinquency accelerate. Time-honored marriage and sexual standards are questioned and repudiated, while the screen and the printed page purvey concepts of brutality and sensuality. Life without reference to God produces this kind of fruit. It is being reaped in great segments of our society here in the United States of America today. Another mark of our society is urbanization. Here before us is the amazing growth of our cities. In the days of Thomas Jefferson, only 3 out of 100 Americans on the average lived in a city. Today, that figure has risen to 70 out of 100. Giant industries and nationwide corporations, together with the advance of automation, have tended to reduce the value attached to individual persons. He is lost in the midst of throngs on the expressways and standees on the buses. A few weeks ago, a young lady, a native of this state, who has moved to one of the great and large northeastern cities, talked with me about her experience. She came from a city in Texas of some 25,000 population. But in this giant city, she commented, "I'm overwhelmed by the suffering that I see on the streets every day." She continued, "There is so little that one person can do that it actually leads one to be insensitive to all of the needs about him." These cities, glorious, offer us opportunities and challenges such as we have never had before. And then I mention population change. Our national population increases at the rate of almost 8,000 every day, 300 persons per hour. Almost every state is increasing in population. Some are growing amazingly rapidly. Adults above 65 and youth between 18 and 25 represent the largest segments in this population growth. Minority peoples are growing more rapidly than the rest of the population. And our nation is on the move, with an average of 1 family out of 5 moving from one place of residence to another within the year. The present population is in excess of 193 million in this country. That is almost as many people who lived in the whole world in the day when Jesus was here. It is estimated that the world's population when Jesus lived on earth was about 250 million. Within the next 15 years, the United States will pass that level. And within 50 years, our population is estimated to reach more than 400 million if our Lord delays his coming. What are the frontiers then in this new age? What are the frontiers in home missions? There was a time when the frontiers of home missions could be viewed realistically in geographical terms. In early days, Texas and Oklahoma, Kentucky and Kansas furnished challenging frontiers. At a later period, cities like Houston and Atlanta, Memphis and Miami emerged as missionary opportunities of the first magnitude. The far western states, the Great Lakes states, and now more recently the very populous northeastern states have provided the most recent geographical frontiers for our denomination. Open doors have been entered, some of them with strength and others with a beginning. Physical frontiers have been crossed in most places in our nation. But we are experiencing an increase of spiritual and moral and social frontiers. The unchurched in our nation number some 75 million, and this host increases by 1 million per year. Crime, pornography, drink, divorce, a revolution in race relations with its attendant strife and even violence. All of these speak to us of the need of a gospel that will penetrate our lives in such a way that our beloved nation can find the answer to these burdensome moral and spiritual and social problems that plague us. We thank God for the advance that has been made. We thank God for his blessings upon this effort to claim our land for Christ. But with more missionaries than ever before, and larger budgets than ever before, and greater opportunities than ever before, we're aware that we are not at the zenith in home missions. We challenge every church to look beyond its own walls and find opportunities of service in its own community. There are needs then beyond the local churches which require outside help. than it is you can turn to your state missions office, to your associational missionary, to the home mission board, and your denominational home mission board stands ready to help in line with its assignment and resources in being an arm for the churches to reach out to the dark corners all around our nation where there is need that cannot be met aside from a special effort and the leadership of God-called and well-prepared missionaries. New churches and missions are being added, and they are needed. Recently, I was in a revival meeting in the state of New York, as I had fellowship during that week not only with the pastor with whom I served, but with other pastors and other congregations. I came away saying, in the lifetime of none of us alive today will there ever be enough Christian churches to meet the needs adequately of these people who by the millions are unchurched and are living in a woefully underchurched part of our country. Church sites and buildings become early concerns of new congregations. Therefore, additional church loan funds are needed. In some cases, buildings must be provided out of mission funds. So that need is before us. The needs of our age demand our best effort in becoming informed about missions, in teaching missions, in praying for missions, in giving to the support of missions, and in becoming involved personally in mission actions in our own communities. We thank God for Women's Missionary Union and your emphasis in these directions. This is no time for us to take pride in what has been accomplished. It is a time for accelerated service and concern. The challenges and needs which face us in this new age are greater than those encountered by any previous generation, and the needs and responsibilities escalate with every passing day. The spiritual foundations which we help to build in the homeland will help make America strong and will enable us to carry the gospel throughout the world in dimensions never yet realized. We are living, we are dwelling in a grand and awful time, in an age on ages telling. To be living is sublime, and to be living for Christ and serving Him is the most sublime privilege of all. It is my joy and my privilege now to present to you some of my colleagues who will share some of their specific interests and concerns in these challenges that are before us in the homeland in this new age. On January 1, there came to our staff for the second time Dr. Fred B. Mosley. Dr. Mosley had served 3 years as Secretary of our City Missions Department after having served as Director of Missions in the state of Louisiana, and prior to that, having served many years as pastor. He went from the home board 3 years ago to be Executive Secretary of the Oregon-Washington Convention. And he came back upon our invitation on January 1 to assume the new place of Assistant to the Executive Secretary Treasurer. Among his duties in this post is program planning and coordination. And this man of God, experienced missionary worker, comes to share with us something about the challenge of our largest cities. Dr. Fred B. Mosley, Assistant to the Executive Secretary Treasurer.
Thank you, Dr. Rutledge. As we think about Megalopoly, Megalopoly is a new phenomenon to American life. This hard-to-pronounce five-syllable word is derived from two Greek words, which means great city.